Before we begin, I wanted to give a huge shout out to the folks at Amazon Music for partnering with us on this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. But more on this later. Right then, let's get right into today's episode. Not a fire drill. The Chinese GP has been announced on the Formula One calendar and it's not been cancelled. We're only 3 or 4 days away from the point of recording till the race, and I still can't believe the fact that Zhou Guanyu will actually have a home race. I mean, I have a question to you, Kunal. Who is the driver in Formula One history who's waited the longest for their home race to arrive? Take a guess.
Well, interesting. Just when F1 stats guru is not here, you're trying to stump me with a stat. Okay, why don't you just give it away?
I don't know. I mean, I spent a lot of time digging, but there is something that I really couldn't find the answer to. But I have to guess, right? It doesn't have to be Naren Karthikeyan, no? I mean, think about it. He made his debut in 2005 and had to wait forever for the Indian Grand Prix to come about.
16 years? 2011,
yeah, no, right? 16? One second. You're the engineer here. I failed my math exam. It's not you. One second. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Oh, it's actually not too long, you know.
6 years.
If you've got to remember that, because Verstappen made his debut in 2015.
You actually had to count. I like that. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But no, technically Max Verstappen as well, right? Similar, because he also made his debut in 2015 and got the race in 21.
Yeah. 6 years. What's common between Max Verstappen, 3-time world champion, and Naren Karthikeyan, India's first and, you know, most popular Formula One driver? They had to wait 6 years to get a home race. Wow. And that's a great stat.
Yeah. Incredible. We can find some stats too. But the interesting part is, it feels absurd that there's no noise about it, no? Because when the Chinese GP gets announced and cancelled every year, which has now become a tradition, we, of course, roll our eye and be like, ah, COVID. But it is finally happening. But the best part is, we're finally going to a track that we can now claim to be underrated, because so many people who have now started watching Formula One will get the chance to experience the Shanghai circuit for the first time. And it'll be some experience to see them just being in awe of the beautiful first jalebi section, no?
For our international listeners, jalebi is when things just go round and round and round. It's actually a very tasty Indian sweet dish, if that's what it's called. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Something. But I mean, it's the opening sequence of corners is brilliant. The last hairpin coming in, I would say that's pretty brilliant as well. But you're saying there's not a lot of noise. I also felt that. And I'm pretty convinced one of the reasons there's not a lot of noise is we are consuming English media. The Chinese consume absolutely, I would say, parallel. There's somebody always listening there, but absolutely parallel media. That's why probably I hope there's a lot of buzz in China and that the grandstands are full. And then Formula One says 400,000 Chinese people actually showed up the first time, the highest ever public gathering since the COVID, whatever was brought upon the world, and something. But maybe it's also the fact that Zhou Guanyu hasn't really done as well. I mean, for whatever little he's done, there's a documentary that somebody in China, some media house in China is releasing on Zhou Guanyu, which is, well, I mean, what will you show his first race where he scored points, which is great in Formula One. You always remember that. You show his accident that happened and, you know, how strong these cars are. And the cars actually got stronger with the roll hoop thanks to Zhou Guanyu. But I can't really otherwise remember much. I mean, there's a really bad stat going around. 7 races in a row, Zhou Guanyu hasn't progressed into Q2. In fact, there are 2 drivers who haven't progressed into Q2 in 2024, and Zhou Guanyu is one of them. Pierre Gasly is the other one. And of course, Zhou Guanyu is yet to out-qualify Valtteri Bottas. But you know what, Samuel? I'm going to puzzle you one more time.
Go for it.
Or since you puzzled me at the start,
go
right?
For it.
Zhou Guanyu is not the only driver who is claiming that the Chinese Grand Prix is his home race. Do you know who the other driver is? Okay, I'll just give it away. Oscar Piastri. He said his great-great-grandfather was Chinese. So he said, this is my 1/16th home race. Can you imagine?
The guy speaks five words, and you're telling me that out of those five words, this is what he said?
Yes. He actually said 1/16th. Maybe the Chinese Grand Prix would have just been that much more popular if they would have just said it's Oscar Piastri's home race. Okay, fine. Oscar Piastri's home race as well. Fine. We give it a joke on you. It's probably his first, and I definitely think it's his last home Grand Prix. I mean, unless this race is such a hit just because it's Zhou Guanyu racing, and then the Chinese sponsors and media and fans just do what it takes to keep him there. But he's not got any result to put him there.
Wait, so are you saying the race will go first or the driver will go first? Because at this moment in time, both seem pretty precarious. Both seem to be hanging on by a string.
You know, I've been saying this in official forums, right, where Formula One people have been present. And I'm like, you're saying you're a world championship. Lewis Hamilton's been saying all along, how can you be a world championship if you're not racing on one of the largest continent in the world? Like, if you were to put it, Africa as that, mm-hmm. right? Don't hold me to the largest, because, of course, Asia is larger. But you know what I mean. I also put it the other way. How are you calling yourself a world championship if you're not racing where 30% of the world lives, which is China and India? So for a world championship status, whatever you want to call it, I think there has to be a Chinese Grand Prix. There should be an Indian Grand Prix as well. We also know the Koreans have come back and said, hey, we'd like to bring you all back to Incheon or whatever that name is. But yeah, I think the Chinese Grand Prix is here to stay. In fact, 5 or 6 years, right? Or 5 years since it's come back. Questions should be asked. Why are they the last ones to rejoin the calendar?
You're right.
After the COVID-19 pandemic, right? And, you know, I'll also say why. Okay, here's a daddy joke. Disclaimer. Why do we have sprint race this weekend?
Why do we have a sprint race this weekend?
Because the Chinese fans were really missing Formula One and the races. So you know what? They said, you know what? We'll just give you two. One's a small one, one's a big one. But you get two starts, two opening laps, two all of that and whatever. So that's, I said it's a daddy joke, so don't hold me to it.
But yeah. You know what? There might be some truth to it, because realistically, it is a question that we must ask. Why is Formula One hosting a sprint race in a circuit it hasn't come to for 5 years? In a circuit, it hasn't come to with this generation of Formula One cars and this generation of Formula One tires, to the point that the teams have no real world data about it. And they get a grand total of one practice session to figure it out. It's like the Formula One bosses have agreed that we can't do entertainment, so let's just add as much degree of volatility as we can. Because for us, at least for this weekend, it might be a good thing that teams might not be ready with their setups 100%, because generally, right, you've got to correlate what you get on the simulator to what you have in real life, because obviously it's a computer, it can't simulate things that well. So you need some time, and the teams do get three practice sessions for that. But a new circuit and just one practice session simply means that at least someone, I'm not saying Red Bull, I'm not saying Max, I'm not saying the leading drivers, but at least someone, I'm betting on the Williams drivers, are going to be walking into the main sprint sessions blind. Because how can you figure that out with, what, only one chassis between two drivers?
Logan Sargeant, we really hope you get your own chassis. And that Williams actually has their own spares to run through the whole program. If nothing, they should have just manufactured those spares and the cars in China, because everyone in the world believes it's just cheaper to manufacture things.
Good point.
Maybe that's the new hack. Somil, that's the hack. China, the Chinese manufacturers, right, factories, etc., factory owners will be talking to Formula One teams saying, you keep all the brains there, you let us do all the manufacturing here, you're under a budget cap, why don't we just manufacture for cheap in China, we'll still get you all the FIA crash tests passed, whatever. I think that's the hack. That's what we should be talking about this weekend. That's the storyline.
you can tell that the two of us are really off the hooks this time out, because we're recording so late at night that that's when the banter comes up. Maybe that's what we should do every single time. Just be absolutely.
But you know, that this is also what Formula One should do every single time. One practice session and boom, 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 every session. Otherwise, you have to maximize, right? Call it a sprint, call it whatever you care. Whatever you want, I don't really care. But giving them enough, just about little time is all I'm happy to know. I mean, running three practice sessions seems extremely, what do you say, wasteful, if that's the word, that you're giving three practice sessions, right? And you're going to just do it all in one hour of a practice session. And guys and girls, whoever's watching, make sure the drivers better keep it between the white lines, Sommel, because... Yeah. Like you're saying, you know, any loss of track time and they'll struggle. And this is also where, on a very serious note now, yes, there's banter involved, a lot of it, 11 minutes in. But this is also where every team's simulator, correlation, simulator work will matter. Because what matters is that the minute you sit in the car, you're not driving it like you're driving it there for the first time. You're using your simulation tools to dial in the car, dial in the setup, dial in your driver as well. So you're able to maximize the 1 hour of track time you get. And Mercedes actually off late is that one team that's been struggling with simulator correlation. So I know every time we talk of, hey, just one practice session and which team could get it wrong, people point to Brazil 2022, where Red Bull got it wrong, Mercedes got it right, George Russell won. But you know, there have been several sprints after that, and Red Bull haven't really gotten it wrong in those sprints as well. But let's see. Samuel, a lot has actually changed in these 5 years. I remember Formula One saying our 1,000th race happened in 2019 at the Chinese Grand Prix. 105 races have gone since then. Nikita Mazepin has come and gone since then. I know you, Sundaram, and myself, we're going to put out a short reel on Instagram in the build-up to the race telling you all the fun things that have changed in Formula One since the last Chinese Grand Prix. And to me, one of the most fun things that has changed is that the last time Formula One raced in China, we actually, you know, everyone's talking of Pirelli tires, but the truth is not just the tire. The wheel rims were different. We raced the 13-inch wheel rims at that time. We are now to the 18-inch wheel rims. So everything has changed. Everything is different this weekend, and that's why I'm pretty sure it's going to be a very cracking one.
It'll be a weird visual to see Formula One back in China. It's like nostalgia, but not nostalgia enough, because you know where 10 years is enough to be classified as nostalgia, but on the borderline. 5 years isn't that weird little spot where you feel like it's happened yesterday, but it's not happened yesterday. So your eyes will flicker on Friday for the first time, like, huh? This gen of Formula One cars at this corner, huh? Is this real? But the damning stat about what's really changed in the last 5 years is that the last time Formula One came to China, Mercedes were so confident in themselves that they actually ended up double stacking Valtteri Bottas and Lewis Hamilton on the same lap in green flag conditions. And they won that race with a 1-2. That's how far ahead they were. Now, before we started recording, I asked you a question, Kunal, about corporates and how they function, because you've spent far more time in companies than I have. And I asked you, do companies really do five-year reviews? Do they really check back what their performance must be like? Do they really do that? Because if you are Mercedes and you're doing that, you're just rubbing your own wounds. I mean, you're just rubbing salt into your own wounds, actually.
Oh, yeah. They're pretty aware of where they've drifted apart in this whole engineering competition called Formula One. And that double stack, again, Formula One has shared that on social media, but incredible, right? Green conditions, double stacking. But the interesting thing is that the last time Formula One came to China, it was Valtteri Bottas who was leading the Drivers' Championship. Can you imagine a driver who never won the World Championship actually ended up coming to this race, leading this particular World Championship? Max Verstappen was just a race winner, yes. Leclerc and Sainz had not even won a single race. So look out for that reel on our Instagram, by the way. We've been focusing a lot of our time on Instagram because that's where we are told we need to spend some bit of time from all the exciting insights that we are sharing. But on a serious note, this circuit with its configuration and so on, it seems like a front limited circuit. It appears that it's going to be cooler. And, you know, that's always a good thing because front limited means it actually works somewhat more in Ferrari's favor. When it's cooler, it means that Mercedes and even McLaren actually go quicker, as we saw in the last, I think it was in Suzuka, mm-hmm. right, as well. So can, you know, Bahrain is one of those closest circuits people are saying this could feel like. Can Red Bull be challenged? Can that one session really help even the playing field, etc., etc.? But you mentioned the 2019 win, Sommel. This circuit, actually, it's been, by the way, we've been racing in China for 16 years before we took a break. So it's been around for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Red Bull scored their first ever pole position, race win, and 1-2 in China.
Yep.
Okay. Mercedes scored their pole position and race win in China. Okay, that was 2012, oof. Nico Rosberg, yes. So lots of history, lots of milestones. And yeah, I mean, talking of milestones, Michael Schumacher's last and 91st win in Formula One was in China.
No so way.
Can you imagine? There's so much history connected to China when it comes to Formula One and these iconic teams that we're talking of, that I really hope there is a local motorsport culture. I mean, I know there's a local motorsport culture, right? But I really hope that there is a local motorsport affection for what Formula One is and, you know, how fastest cars on the planet and so on.
I just want to see Seoul on the track, seriously. No, I don't mean Seoul the city, but I just want to see some Seoul from the fans on the track, because it's, you're so right, it feels like a ghost circuit, even though it's had so much of connection to Formula One history. And when you think about it, right, probably circuits like Interlagos or Melbourne or the others, the way they hold a special place in our heart just isn't the same with China, even though they've got so many iconic moments like Rosberg's win, like Vettel's win, like Schumacher having that incident, and also a couple of other really crazy things, right? Like Schumacher crashing before the race began and then having to go to the spare car as well in what would be 2004, if I'm not wrong.
I think so, right?
Yeah. It's absurd.
And then, of course, Lewis Hamilton beaching it in the pit lane.
Yeah.
Right, in China. Yeah, in his debut season. So 2000 and whatever.
Seven. Sebastian Vettel passing a couple of cars on the entry of the pit lane here as well.
Yeah. And Jenson Button driving into the Red Bull pit box.
Yes.
In his first year with McLaren. That was another really exciting time.
And even Hamilton did something similar, didn't he, at this very place? He drove into the Mercedes McLaren pit box in his first year at Mercedes as well.
I believe. Yeah. So lots of... Can you imagine? Lots of exciting things. But let's switch to 2024. Why don't we do that? 18 minutes in. We've already spoken of front limited circuit like Bahrain. We've spoken of the cooler temperatures. But, you know, Red Bull is still that damn team to challenge. We're going to come to the next few races because Ferrari's just won in Australia. We're going to come for the next few races wondering, will there be a challenge? Will there be a challenge? And I mean, you know, Red Bull is so dominant that the top five fastest pit stops are Red Bull's.
Yeah.
Okay. The top 11 fastest pit stops are Red Bull and then Ferrari. And these are all under 2.3 seconds. Okay. Then I'm going to add more, right? Red Bull could actually score their 100th pole position this weekend because Max Verstappen has, of course, been unbeaten in qualifying in 2024. And if it's Ferrari, Ferrari has actually been waiting for a long time to score their 250th pole position as well. And, of course, going back just to Red Bull, it could be Max Verstappen, I think, sixth consecutive pole, his longest streak of pole position. So lots of milestones, again, being connected to China, I would say.
But one big thing to watch for really this time out, in my opinion, has to be qualifying. Leave the race aside, Let's not leave the race aside totally in sentiment, but the idea is that the race probably is going to be a little predictable if the teams find the right setup, which a lot of them actually have optimized doing in the sprint weekends. So what should we really be watching the Chinese Grand Prix for? Drivers showcasing their courage and their understanding of the circuit in qualifying, because that is what Formula One is all about. Drivers pushing it right to the very limit and finding the most out of themselves and the car. And when the variable element is the circuit, a circuit that nobody has driven on for the last 5 years and in this generation of a Formula One car, it will be genuinely intriguing to see what the gap to Max Verstappen is for all the people behind him. Or in fact, if anything, can anyone actually out-qualify? Because keep an eye out on the gaps that we've seen previously in qualifying. They've been cutting down bit by bit, race after race. Sergio Perez, to the point, if you guys forgot, was only 0.06 of a second behind in Suzuka, which is a proper driver's circuit. So he may not be the best in the race, but I'm genuinely willing to pay money to watch qualifying just to see how crazy it will be. And we might just see surprises here. We might just see drivers who we don't quite expect to see high up in the race put up some really good qualifying sessions. I don't know. Can Nico Hülkenberg do something interesting here? Because he's normally the one who really puts a foot in the door on Saturdays.
And we're going to have two qualifying sessions. Of course. Call it what you want. It's qualifying and sprint qualifying. And there are five drivers yet to out-qualify their teammates. We, of course, spoke of Zhou Guanyu and Pierre Gasly. But there's Logan Sargeant, of course. There is, I believe, Daniel Ricciardo.
Yes.
Definitely needs... I mean, who would have ever thought that Daniel Ricciardo is going to struggle against Yuki Tsunoda? And I mean, I'm not saying Tsunoda is bad, but you know, Daniel Ricciardo was actually... the last Red Bull win here was scored by Daniel Ricciardo. That's the dominant... Daniel Ricciardo that we remember, right? The honey badger, as we know it, right? And then, of course, there is, I believe, Checo Perez. He's yet to out-qualify his teammate as well. So that's what's to look out for in qualifying.
Esteban Ocon too, no? He's also beaten Pierre Gasly every single time.
Absolutely. Ocon has actually been, he's been in Q2 in that Alpine in two out of the last four races. So he's actually been punching way above the weight of that Alpine. Pierre Gasly again yet to get out of Q1. So very interesting trends that, you know, we keep tracking off. And switching, do you have something on qualifying?
I do have something on Alpine more than qualifying. Because yes. We normally tend to read a lot of Formula One. We just have to. We just like to as well. But one of the articles I was scrolling through this week was Bruno Famin saying that both of my drivers are happy. How? How can they be happy, Kunal? Like, is there something lost in translation or what?
Bruno Famin also said, he put the blame of this car on the previous management. Okay. But very cheekily, he didn't say which previous management. Because Renault has, of course, had lots of previous managements, as we definitely no, right? But,
I'm waiting for the day when they turn around and say, our owners are the issue. Sorry, which ones? Because they've got how socialistic can a Formula One team be by having 50,000 owners in one team? Do you even remember who owns Alpine now?
Well, yeah, you know, technically, if you own shares to Williams, we don't know how many people own shares to Williams Racing as well. So it could be 15,000 owners in Williams as well, because it's publicly traded.
True. Yeah. That's one thing. That is indeed true. But a lot of it does come down to Williams Advanced Technology and all of their other engineering prowess, which they are quite good at. But I find it weird. But okay, I don't want to rain on Alpine's parade far more. We should go to the interesting point that you had in mind. And it was about...
I think I have every point interesting, so now I'm puzzled.
Fair point. But,
okay, we could look at this. Five drivers have scored in all races in 2024. If I can just switch to races, because the obvious thing which everyone is going to talk about is that all the four races in 2024 have actually had 1-2 finishes, right? But there are five drivers who scored in all the four races, which is Fernando Alonso, Checo Perez, Lando Norris, Oscar Piastri, and Charles Leclerc. right? And to just further build on that, and this is a very stat-heavy thing, right? Because we're missing F1 stats guru as well.
Yeah.
Leclerc is the only driver with top four race finishes in 2024, which sounds pretty cool, right? But what sounds cooler is that Carlos Sainz is the only driver to finish on the podium in every race that he has finished, right? And since we're talking of Ferrari, Ferrari has absolutely dominated. And I know this is your favorite part, Saumil, because every time you ask me, I have no clue. But Ferrari has absolutely dominated the driver of the day, poll, ratings, voting, whatever you call it, in 2024.
You've all been four doing races. Your homework. Very nice.
I said, I have to please you, sir.
But they have, yeah. Behrmann, Leclerc, Sainz consistently all the way through. Oh, we shall see. But on that as well, I find it interesting because one more dynamic to watch this time will be Ferrari and their internal team battles, because we've never really had a proper citrus paribus occasion with them. It's always been something or the other. Leclerc having a technical issue in Bahrain, Sainz not being there in Jeddah, and then Australia also not being entirely a perfect weekend for Leclerc, given all the issues that they had in the background as well with the setup and the car not being 100% perfect, which means that we are now properly getting to see the first real intra-team battle between Ferrari, and the second round of it carries on to China, where only one practice session exists, two qualifying sessions, two small races. Bring it on. Give me more of Sainz versus Leclerc, and I will have it every single day of the week. This will be lovely.
It will absolutely be lovely. And, you know, in genuine talk, there is a lot of hope with what Ferrari is doing, because they've not really found a lot of pace through upgrades. They've just extracted more from the car, and that's always good in terms of understanding, in terms of finding a sweet spot and so on. And all we want is, all I want is close racing. I don't care who wins. It could be Max, it could be Leclerc, it could be Carlos Sainz. So you win the lottery every time Sainz wins. I just want close racing. I don't want the driver up ahead, finishing 30 seconds ahead of the pack, cruising on a Sunday win, even though that driver absolutely loves to cruise to that win. I want battles like I sort of keep talking of. So that's what we will look out for this weekend, hopefully two times over, you know. And some more stats, actually. You mentioned Ocon, and another stat came into my mind. So Esteban Ocon, Saumil, has finished all the four races. Just that, he's finished all the four races outside of the points. And there's one more driver who's also done that, which is Valtteri Bottas. Again, finished all the races, but finished outside of the points, horribly outside of the points. In fact, Bottas has finished, I think, the last four or five races. He's finished lower than where he started. That's how bad that Sauber car is. And that's another thing that we'd hope that with Audi, whatever, coming in, that they are able to make these inroads into performance as well. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what becomes of Audi. Who do they finally end up signing? Because Fernando Alonso, as we know, has now blocked the Aston Martin seat, the other Aston Martin seat, because the first Aston Martin seat has been blocked by, of course, Lance Stroll till at least 2030.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. 2030. Oh, God. More content for us. Beautiful. We're not going to run out of jokes for the next 10 years now.
What?
He's going to stay for longer, of course he is. But
I'm
genuinely intrigued, right? Because you mentioned Sauber, and I want to be talking about this for a bit as well. Because I remember at the 2011 Indian Grand Prix, I was there as a fan. You were there as a crew member, as a part of Force India and their marketing team. It's weird, actually. Funny how life comes about. But I was there as an 8-year-old, and I remember the excitement around Naren Karthikeyan being very limited, even though the Indian fans really were seeing F1 for the first time. And I think that stage of people's lives where nationality became less of a reason to support someone than just having a deep personal bond or emotional connect with their story was already at the start of its journey worldwide. And it's weird how there people were supporting more of Michael Schumacher than Naren Karthikeyan. And the sentiment was that, yeah, there's an Indian driver, sure, but it doesn't make that much of a difference. And I want to see what it's like here this weekend, because you mentioned the worries and troubles that Stake and Sauber have about how dismal they are, and the records just keep on getting worse and worse and worse. I don't know, there's literally no way for us to measure because there's a big language barrier there. But what would the sentiment in the stands really be like? Would they, I mean, knowing China, would they force them to have a Zhou Guanyu flag, or would they force them to be in green, or what it would be like? Because genuinely, as a fan, that era of supporting any athlete just because they're from the same country, unless it's a team sport, has passed on, I believe. Like, people don't do that anymore.
I strongly think it depends what country you come from, right?
Like, generally.
I know what you mean.
Generally, it's...
No, I know what you mean about...
The Hulk Hogan era is
gone. To give you an example.
Yeah, basically.
To give you an example. In Norway, Dennis Hauger, okay? He is probably top 10, top 15 most popular athletes in Norway, despite having only driven in Formula 2. And I say only Formula 2 because he's, of course, not made it to Formula 1, right? So it all depends, what China is how it's like. But it's known to be a very nationalistic, pride country. So there's a good chance they're just like, we are going to cheer Joe, even if he's starting 20th and last for the 8th race in a row or whatever you call it. That's just how it is. But...
Oh, we're still on. Hey, incredible. We still keep on chatting. But that's what Sauber may be working for. Just give the fans in the grandstand more viewing, as much viewing as possible of their favorite drivers by keeping them in the pit box for as long as you possibly can. That is smart.
I'll tell you what is also smart. When you start 20th and last, you, especially in two races you're going to have, your fans get to see a lot more of you zipping past them because you're starting further back on the start box as well. So clearly, lots of daddy jokes, aren't there?
And you don't get lost in the battles because there's no way they can get confused if you're the only car running alone in clean air. Or dirt. Yeah, clean air. Yeah, exactly.
That was heavy. That was heavy duty. But
I've seen that happen. I've seen that happen, I swear. Because the 2011 Indian Grand Prix, again, same thing. Full respect to Naren Karthikeyan for what he's achieved in all of Indian motorsport, because he's been a torchbearer who's carried so many hopes and dreams alive and then inspired so many people to do so. But the ruthless truth is that when he was there at the Indian Grand Prix, it's so unfortunate that people were able to identify him earlier more than Mark Webber, because they could just see him more often and the car was just consistently slower. And it's not me saying this. There was a... Am I unveiling too much at 3 o'clock in the night in India time? But there were literally a group of middle-aged women who had come to watch Formula 1 for the first time. And there the entire... They knew Sebastian Vettel. They knew Michael Schumacher. They just couldn't tell their cars because according to them, they just went too fast and they were going side by side with too many people. But they could tell what the HRT was because they were way further back and they could predict that, this guy's going to come later, right? We know it's this guy's going to come. So it's just the way... We're raining hard on Zhou Guanyu today, aren't we?
Why not? I mean... Not that he needs it from us. Probably he's not listening to this one, but he's going to be busy with
it. Our listener base is also not in China, really. So.
Yeah. But last stat from me.
One sec.
Go on.
One sec. Can they actually listen to Spotify in China? They can't, right?
If you are in China listening to us on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts in English, please write to us on social media. We'd love to hear it.
Because they'd be banned.
No, I think it should be okay. I have a few Chinese followers on Twitter. I don't know how they get there. I'm not on Weibo. I don't hope to ever be there. But last...
Oh, that's brave of them, huh?
Yeah.
But yes, the last stat. Yes, before we go to the predictions.
Last stat from me. There are 5 drivers who finished on the podium this year, of course. Interestingly... The 5th driver, Ferrari and Red Bull drivers have been there. The 5th driver is Lando Norris. Now, the drivers who have not made it to the podium, that list is more interesting. It's both the Aston Martin drivers. Yes, both of them. Fernando Alonso, by this time last year, had several podiums. Lance Stroll was hoping for a podium, but that's still both the Aston Martin drivers. Oscar Piastri has not been on the podium, so that's 3 of them. The biggest surprise is... Neither of the Mercedes drivers have been on the podium, right? And very interesting, there's a trend. So George Russell has finished 5th, 6th, then there was no finish. So it's 5th, 6th, 7th in all the races he's finished. So if since we're getting into the predictions mode of this hour of the podcast, could George Russell finish 8th? Is that the trend where, you know, trend is pointing that he's just falling down the order in his race finishes, right? The other trend, Lewis Hamilton, who, by the way, after I think 6 races, finally outqualified George Russell. Lewis finished 7th, 9th, and 9th. Okay. So is the number 7 coming up again? So it's 7997, or is a new trend starting?
It's weird though, no? It's absurd that these numbers are associated with him. It's I don't know. Legacies get tarnished by stuff like this. I don't know. Legacy is a very hollow concept anyway in my head. But for so many people watching, and they'll be like, this is your favorite driver. This is the greatest of all time. Whereas the Formula One race report of the 2019 Grand Prix will literally mention in the last line, this win solidifies Lewis Hamilton's status as the GOAT of Formula One. And to see how far things have come 5 years later is weird. But prediction time. I get too passionate sometimes, which is amazing when the predictions come in. That I love to tend to bang on my laptop or the table around me whenever it's any talk of Carlos Sainz, because naturally the heart will follow him along. But realistically, let's go a little left field. I say Sergio Perez will end up beating Max in the first qualifying session because it's more volatility and I'm just banking on him to thrive in all of that. There's no real justification of it. We'll just figure it out. But this is a wild prediction to throw in the mix. For one qualifying session, mostly the first one, because Max, I mean, give him more time and he becomes more efficient. But I'm banking on some chaos in the first qualifying session to enable Sergio Perez to out-qualify Max. And if that does happen, what a wild occasion that'll be.
All I heard was Checo Perez out-qualifying Max Verstappen. It's very surprising you're not banking on Carlos Sainz, who has, of course, been the Ferrari driver in form, in momentum, and all of that. But okay, I'm going to just say Max Verstappen, because this circuit is extremely hard on the tires. And we know what happens when that happens. When something is very hard on the tires, that Red Bull is in another league of their own. They'll finish the race and they'll say, yeah, we didn't even use our tires up. That's how good our degradation was. But Ferrari's, of course, improved their degradation, as we saw just the last race. So can there actually be a fight? That's what we are hoping for. But I also think Alexander Albon will finish 11th for the umpteenth time, just about missing out on those points.
Yeah, same as what happened in Japan also, was it not? Yeah, I think. But thank you so much, folks, for listening. No Zhou Guan Yu was harmed in the making of this episode. No Sauber professionals were also harmed in the making of this episode. We've tried to be very, very generous in what we say. Just don't mind us. We're all very tired and all very, very eager to talk about Formula One. But if in case you did enjoy this episode, which I know you did because you've stayed till so long, of course you have. Rate us well on all the platforms if you want to. Share this episode with all your friends, family members and colleagues who would like to listen to more about Formula One. And also check out our social media pages, because we're trying to put in some more fun short form content that's snackable, easier to listen, and provides all the insights that we do on the Inside Line podcast, but trimmed down to under 60 seconds. But once again, folks, thank you for watching, thank you for listening, and we'll be back with a Chinese GP race review where we will only mention Zhou Guan Yu once. It's a challenge we've set for ourselves. Take care, folks. Bye bye. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. Before we ended, I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Amazon Music once again for partnering with us on this episode of the podcast.